This is Jim Inkster. Coming next today, we'll visit with Stephen Morey, the Secretary of Economic Development for the Jindal administration. Stephen was the head of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber for a few years, former LSU student body president, and he is here to talk about the bullish expansion as far as economic development in our state. We'll talk with Stephen Morey about this and more. Also, late in the hour, we'll hear if things go according to plan from Vance McAllister, the congressman who was elected surprisingly last year in a special election in the 5th District, got out of the race after being caught on videotape kissing a woman who was not his wife, and now he's back in as a candidate for re-election. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It is 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. In-house is Stephen Morey, the Secretary of Economic Development for the Jindal administration and for the state of Louisiana. He's held that post since the new administration came in January of 2008. And of course, there have been some remarkable projects that have come to Louisiana over the last 6 years. And the man who has steered the ship is in studio with us. Stephen Morey, good morning to you.
Jim, good morning. Great to be with you again.
And 20 years ago at this time, you were finishing up a year as the student body president at Louisiana State University.
Indeed I was. That was a remarkable experience that had a big impact on my life.
He, of course, later became head of the Baton Rouge Chamber. Went off to Harvard after that, right?
After LSU. A few years after LSU, I had the opportunity to work as an engineer for a few years and then work for Bill Jenkins as assistant to the chancellor, helped run the search to recruit Mark Emmert to LSU, and then went to business school at Harvard.
And you were very close to Bill Jenkins, aren't you?
Was and am. Yeah, he's someone who's been a mentor to me for just over 20 years.
And Stephen has moved fast, barely 40 years old, right?
42, yeah.
So he's actually younger than Governor Jindal. And he has not run for office yet, but he has built quite a record if he chooses to run at some point. And some thought you would be the new president of LSU.
I heard that a couple times.
Yeah, you probably heard it on this show. But that might happen at some point, but it didn't happen this time. Did you actually go for that, or were you just waiting to see what happened?
I'm afraid the rumors were a lot stronger than the reality. I do have a deep love for LSU and would certainly love to serve LSU in a meaningful leadership capacity at some point in the future. But it's important at any moment in time, I think, for the institution to have the right leader for that particular moment in time.
Okay. Well, you have concentrated on economic development, and of course that goes hand in glove with everything else happening in the state. And some things are not good when we look at some aspects of how life is in Louisiana, but from an economic development perspective, you have had success. What do you attribute that to?
Well, there are really multiple reasons. I think, you know, we started at an inauspicious time. You know, the governor took office and I took office with him literally just 2 or 3 weeks after the official start of the Great Recessions. It wasn't the best possible time to begin. But despite that, we've been able to outperform the South and the country. Attribute our success to a number of things. I certainly think would give great credit to the governor for taking on economic development as his top priority, and not only making policy changes with the support of the legislature to make us more attractive for business investment, but also investing the dollars in LED and in our business recruitment efforts and business expansion efforts to help us succeed. I think at the same time, the state also has benefited from something that's helping the country as a whole, which is the shale gas revolution nationally. has created a whole series of opportunities for the United States and therefore for Louisiana to compete for that really did not exist just a few years ago. And I think third, really a big focus on not just the competitiveness issues, but working to diversify our economy and dramatically improving our workforce development efforts. You know, if you had to point to one single thing that we did at LED that made the biggest difference, I think it was creating the Fast Start program, which is a customized workforce training program for new and expanding business enterprises that's been ranked number one in the country the last 4 years in a row. That's made a big difference in many of the biggest economic development wins in our state.
What are some of the, a few of the big hits you've had that you are most proud of?
There's a growing list, but certainly toward the top are projects like Bell Helicopter's new Jet Ranger X assembly facility, our first modern era aircraft assembly facility in Lafayette. The IBM project and the EA project in Baton Rouge, GE Capital's Technology Center in New Orleans, the Gameloft Video Game Development Center in New Orleans, in Northwest Louisiana just a few months ago, CSC, maybe not well known in Louisiana, but it's a Fortune 500 technology company, announced a project very similar to the IBM project, an 800-job software center at the Cyber Innovation Center. Recently, close to here in Lafayette, CGI, one of the five biggest IT companies in the world, is opening up a 400-job technology center. There are many more around the state. Probably the one sector that I'm most excited about, because we really started almost from scratch, is the software development and digital media sector. You know, when you look at our economy today, Jim, obviously the big headlines tend to be about these huge multi-billion dollar industrial projects. And I guess economically, that is the thing that's having the biggest impact right now and that will have the biggest impact over the next few years. But the fastest growing part of our economy is actually software development, digital media. In fact, the absolute employment growth in that sector has been 25% since we took office. And I expect it'll continue to be the fastest growing industry in Louisiana over the next few years.
297-5633 is your number for Stephen Morey. In the last decade, he spent 4 years as head of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber, and in the last 6 years, he has been the Economic Development Secretary for the state. And in three of those years, site selection named LED one of the top five best-performing state economic development agencies in the country. So you've done good work. I don't think the critics of the Jindal administration really focus on you, because it's hard to criticize what has happened. But you've had, as you noted, the benefit of the capital to get the job done. That helps a lot, doesn't it?
It makes a big difference. And I think not just the from an incentives perspective, because that really only makes a difference when you're kind of in serious contention, sort of in the runoff, if you will, for a major project. But having the governor make some of the policy changes we needed to improve both the perception and reality of our business climate was huge. I think I'd also give great credit to the governor's personal involvement. I think one of the least appreciated things about his leadership the last 6.5 years is the personal role he's played in the recruitment of many of these biggest projects. I would absolutely give him an A-plus for every time he's interacted with a business executive or a group of business executives that we needed him to, both for not just making the time to do it, but being able to speak their language in a very compelling way. That's been a big part of our success.
297-5633, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Jessica asked about the trip to Asia earlier this year. What benefits will the state derive from this?
Well, I think Asia, you know, broadly speaking, is going to be one of the biggest regions in the world in terms of investment in Louisiana over the next few years, not just Japan, Korea, and Taiwan that we visited earlier this year. But I think increasingly China is actually, for the first time in a meaningful way, going to be a major source of foreign direct investment into Louisiana. We have today, I would say that in the whole Asia region, we're pursuing roughly 20 projects, you know, that collectively represent over $20 billion of potential investment, probably 15,000 potential jobs. I certainly expect that we're going to see multiple investments from that part of the world announced in our state in the next year.
You mentioned the IBM project, and Baton Rouge is certainly focused on this, and it will bring 800 jobs, high-paying positions, mm-hmm. to the city. What does it take to get somebody like IBM to come to Baton Rouge?
That sector is one of the most competitive sectors to compete for. And when it really comes down to it, when you're talking about software development and digital media, you're really talking about talent. That is the number one issue by far. Now, there were other things that were important. You know, incentives made a difference. The general business climate made a difference. But the number one factor was talent. As a graduate of LSU, I made kind of a personal pitch to IBM, and there were many people involved in that effort. But in terms of my personal role, one of the things that I emphasized to the company repeatedly was both my own experience and that of many others who've gone to LSU and other Louisiana institutions, that are talented, young people that get out of undergrad really would like to find good professional jobs in Louisiana, and too often have left to go to places like Houston, Atlanta, Dallas, Austin, and so forth. And what the pitch that we really made to IBM, and to a large extent to these other technology companies that have been coming to Louisiana, is that if you plant a flag in our state, you're going to be amazed at the talent that will come to your door. Yes, if you're looking for the sheer size of the talent pool in computer science, software development, Silicon Valley is always going to be number one in the United States, but you're also going to be competing with literally thousands of other companies for that talent. Whereas in Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Lafayette, Bossier, Shreveport, companies have an opportunity to really be an employer of choice if you're a major technology company. That was a big part of what made that successful. The other piece was the very unique partnership that we developed with LSU. I give great credit to the Dean of Engineering there, Rick Kubek, who's doing a wonderful job. And the partnership, both the general partnership as well as the investment in expanding the computer science program, made a big difference in IBM's decision to choose Baton Rouge.
877-217-5757, wherever you are, for Stephen Morey. Andrew Mull from AARP's offices in downtown at One American Place asks you, Stephen. He says, as our state's population continues to age, what are your thoughts on older workers' place in the Louisiana economy, and how can the state engage older workers?
Jim, I've been a student of public policy in Louisiana now for just over 20 years, and thought a lot about economic development, about education, about transportation infrastructure, all the different things that kind of impact our state and quality of life. And I've really come to the absolute conviction that the single most important metric of our success in the future will be growth, job growth specifically. If we want Louisiana to become the state that we've always aspired for it to be in terms of not just economic vitality and job opportunity, but quality of life, poverty reduction, improvements in educational attainment, and so forth, we need to be able to grow jobs at a faster rate than the South and the U.S. on a regular basis. We've done that over the last 6.5 years during a deep, national economic downturn, but the key is to do it over a long period of time, including when the U.S. Is back to growth. With more job growth, will become more job opportunities for people at every level of education and also at every age level as well.
Well, the latest unemployment figures show Louisiana with an unemployment rate of 5.3%, and that is below the national average, which is now at 6.1%, and the national average has improved. Louisiana is still ahead of the game, but we're heading to a break shortly. But our population has remained largely stagnant through many, many years, and, of course, during Katrina actually went down. That's a big passion of yours as to how we can grow the state, perhaps get a congressional district back, maybe two over time. And it will take some creative thinking. And we've got a guy here who has done a lot of creative thinking. So we'll talk to Stephen Morey about this and more when we return. 297-5633 is your number. And outside the area, it is 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF www.jobs.org. 111,590 people unemployed in our state right now, and 1,999,817 are employed. So we need another 183 people to hit the 2 million mark. We'll return to Stephen Moray after this 90-second pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Stephen Moray came to LSU by way of Mississippi. He didn't know a whole lot about LSU football at that time, but he found out in a hurry as a member of the LSU band, and he has become a major part of our state in the 20-some years since his arrival. Was that 24 years ago?
It would have been 1990, so yeah, right 20, at
24 years ago. Yeah. He came to Louisiana State University, and of course, the music program is world-renowned, and that's what attracted you, but you found out there were a few other things in this state that we're known for good reason.
That's right. No, it's been a great run, and you know, going back to your early comment, you're right on unemployment. We actually have the second lowest unemployment rate in the South today, and that is in large part because we have the second fastest job growth in the South since January 2008, about 6.5 years ago. When you talk about population growth, the single strongest driver of population growth over time is job growth. People move from state to state for a variety of reasons, but the most common reason they move is to follow a job opportunity. So when we're able to grow jobs faster than other places, the population would grow in turn. If you go from roughly 1980 or 1981 through just before Hurricane Katrina, we experienced almost 25 consecutive years in a row of population outmigration. Literally more than 600,000 people left our state. The best year of out-migration that year was strong out-migration.
So the only reason why we have a population growth at all is coming from the births outnumbering the deaths within the state. As far as if you factor those moving in and those moving out, we haven't done very well over the past 45 years.
Well, the 25-year period from 1980 to 2005, we in fact did very, very poorly. In fact, roughly the worst in the country. The last 6 years, we've had positive in-migration every year. And in fact, our population growth over that period of time is about 15% faster than the U.S. overall. So we're not setting the world on fire in terms of the speed. But we have shifted from strong out-migration to consistent, albeit relatively small, population in-migration. But it's still obviously a dramatic shift and one that obviously all of us have an interest in continuing.
All right, 297-5633. We'll go to the phone lines in just a moment, but I do have a flurry of emails. Here's one from Paul Sawyer, who, of course, was Richard Baker's top aide at one point. He says, LED just launched the Louisiana Job Connection. Please explain how this tool works.
Well, this is an exciting new project. It's a very, I guess, entrepreneurial thing, you might say, that we're doing. We're launching a new site. It's open to businesses right now. It'll be open to individuals in the near future. When you think about the process of finding a job, whether you're a job seeker looking for a job or an employer looking to fill a position, it's very, very inefficient. It's hard to kind of find each other. For the business to find someone that has the qualifications that they're looking for an individual to find a professional opportunity that really maximizes utilization of their particular skills. And what Louisiana Job Connection is going to do is provide a platform for matching businesses and job seekers in a very robust and actually an automatic way. It's got a sort of a special algorithm on the back end that helps to match job seekers with positions and openings that best fit their particular skill set. That's going to be launching in the near future. It's going to be a very important tool for us as we're seeking not just to help fill as many of these positions that are opening up as we can with people in Louisiana now, but in many cases, we're going to have more jobs for particular types of roles. A great example would be computer science graduates. We're literally going to have more jobs than we have people in the state to fill them. So we're going to be going out and using this site to recruit, if you will, Louisiana expats to move back to Louisiana to take those jobs.
297-5633, John in Lafayette. You're on the air with Stephen Moray. Hi, John.
Okay. Good morning, you all. Mr. Moray, a short comment and then a question. First, I think you've been the superstar of the general administration by far. So congratulations. And my question really is, maybe two quick ones. One, a truck manufacturing plant, and two, widening of the Panama Canal. They would be able to do as far as our ports, getting them ready for that.
What was the question on the truck plant?
I think he says, will we get a truck manufacturing plant at some point in Louisiana or some place in our state?
Sure. Well, first of all, the automotive industry has been one of the most heavily impacted industries nationally, unfortunately, by the downturn. In fact, a lot of your listeners may not realize there hasn't been a single greenfield automotive assembly facility of a major manufacturer announced in the United States anywhere in more than 6 years. So we have not had a lot of opportunities. Mexico has gotten two or three, but not the United States. But we are in very close touch with, I think it's fair to say, 100% of the major foreign automotive manufacturers. Those are the ones that would have the greatest propensity to open up new automotive assembly facilities in the United States. We're mostly focused on the car market as opposed to the heavy truck market, just because it's a lot bigger, although there are some truck opportunities as well. I think there will be two or three significant shots we'll have in the next 2 to 3 years. We're going to be well positioned, I think, to get at least one of those. On the Panama Canal, we started looking at that very closely probably 5 years ago. We actually conducted a really thorough analysis of our opportunities there. I really thought initially it would be a transformational opportunity for Louisiana. Our analysis suggested it actually won't be. It'll be very significant in the sense that I think it's going to help us to sustain volume growth at our ports of probably about 6% per year, which will be a nice, healthy growth rate, but not nearly as big as I thought it would be. And the short answer is that all the major Gulf Coast ports are expected to maintain their current market share, but to grow at a more rapid pace. And we're well positioned to take advantage of that.
Sandra in Broadmoor asks about the tax breaks that were used in many cases to attract industry to Louisiana. She asks, how many people are going to be hired from the Louisiana workforce? And she notes that the film industry, in her estimation, does not bring a lot of, or does bring a lot of people from other parts of the country here, but does not hire a majority of its workers from Louisiana. Don't know if that's right or not, but your thoughts about her concerns.
I think if you look at the film industry, you know, going back 12 years ago to when the state really created kind of the modern film tax credit that sort of precipitated all the growth that's happened since then. I think at the beginning it really was primarily an import effort, simply because the special expertise required was largely not available in Louisiana. What's happened since then, though, is we've built up a very deep skill base in the industry. I think in many, many cases, a very, very large portion, if not the majority, of the staffing is in fact coming from Louisiana, and that percentage is growing over time. I think in other industry sectors, I feel very comfortable saying that well over 90%, in fact, probably typically over 95% of the new employment opportunities, this is over tens of thousands of jobs, are coming from existing Louisiana residents. In fact, these companies wouldn't be investing here if they didn't think they could be successful in staffing primarily from Louisiana.
All right. Jim Mayer writes that he would like to see a double decking of I-110 going from east from the end of the bridge to the 10-12 split, going west from O'Neill to the bridge. We've talked about a loop. What about double decking the other state? Is that you were head of bracket one time?
Indeed, I was.
Is that a plausible suggestion?
Well, you know, when we were at BRAC, when I first started at BRAC, we would go to the legislature each year and try to lobby for more money for roads for the Baton Rouge area to meet our needs here. And it took me a couple of years to realize that the problem wasn't that other parts of the state were getting the money. The problem was there wasn't enough money to be able to meet all the capacity needs that were out there. It's been a big challenge, not just for our state, but increasingly for the country as a whole, as healthcare and pension obligations and other things are kind of crowding out transportation infrastructure funding. We've obviously made some progress in that area with some pretty big investments the governor's made in the I-10, I-12 corridors, not to mention other roads. But there's still a lot of work, obviously, yet to be done.
All right. A question from Silas Bogue saying that rarely do you and the governor discuss the downside of population growth, traffic impacts on infrastructure, pollution, He writes, "For my money, I wish half of the people in Louisiana would move to Texas."
Well, there certainly are issues that have to be addressed with growth, but I just believe to my core that we're in much better shape if we can grow as a state than if we shrink or we're stagnant as a state. You have to look no further than to think about how much culture and family matters to the people of Louisiana, and how painful it was for so many families to see their sons and grandsons and granddaughters leave the state in the 80s and 90s in search of opportunities elsewhere, largely in Texas, by the way. Interesting, mm-hmm. That's not going to be a surprise to many people, but when you really look at where people were going when they left, it was the overwhelming majority went to Texas. Well, not surprisingly, they had the huge metro areas and rapid job growth there.
Your friend and mine, Joe Tregel, has noted that in 1970, Austin was a smaller city than Baton Rouge. Now, what happened?
I noted that myself. In fact, my return to Baton Rouge 10 years ago, in fact, almost 6 months to the day after the official start of the Jim Inkster show on March 1 of 2004, was largely participated by a trip to Austin that the business community took back in 2003. I think it's fair to say that many of the business leaders that visited Austin, I guess now 11 years ago, were embarrassed by that comparison. And thinking about how Baton Rouge and Austin were roughly the same place in 1970, and by that, the time of that trip, Austin obviously had raced far ahead. And one of the things I think that Austin, if you really had to boil it down to one thing, I think there that business community there really embraced the potential to grow and to grow in a diversified way. You know, they decided back around 1970 that they wanted to be a major technology hub, and they made significant investments to get there. That realization, to a very large extent, in fact, primarily, I think, was the catalyst that led to a very dramatic change in direction for the Baton Rouge Area Chamber, precipitated the huge capital campaign that we did to help sort of recapitalize the organization and really focus it more on regional economic development. I think what you're seeing happening right now in the Baton Rouge area, in a lot of ways, is like what happened in Austin. It's just that we're kind of catching up two or three decades later.
297-5633 for Stephen Morey. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Secretary Morey.
Thank you. Regarding the educated workforce, has the business community complained about Governor Jindal's flip-flopping on Common Core?
They have not complained to me. I'm not saying there haven't been complaints. When we're competing for projects, whether it's existing companies in Louisiana interested in expanding or new companies thinking about coming in, workforce typically is among the top two or three considerations that they have. In fact, the more focused on professional jobs the particular project is, the more that workforce actually tends to be number one. However, the evaluation of that is based largely on the available talent pool. They look at a variety of different factors to sort of make that evaluation. To this point, I think that Common Core and the debate around that is of great interest to a lot of companies, but we're not yet seeing it, have an impact, you know, one way or the other in terms of business development decisions.
How often do you talk with the governor?
You know, I see him often. I'd say we have a formal briefing, kind of one-on-one, or me and the governor and the chief of staff, about every 2 weeks. That's been consistent for the last 6.5 years. That's sort of, you know, focus time when we're talking primarily about our prospect pipeline, potential meetings we'd like him to take. Sometimes if we have important decisions to make that are outside the box, we obviously see each other, you know, at events and other forums, but that's really our time to focus on, you know, where we're at in our business development pipeline. And then, of course, in addition to that, he's very involved with, you know, one-off meetings with individual prospects that we ask him to take. So I, you know, obviously see him more often than that as a result.
Do you ever disagree?
Well, you know, the governor, the way I think that he governs, first of all, I think he has an incredibly detailed level of understanding about every aspect of state government. It's really stunning, actually. You know, he's got kind of a photographic memory. But the way that he has governed, I think, in terms of the cabinet, is he really does kind of compartmentalize to some extent each person's role. So, for example, if it's an economic development topic, I would say, you know, at least 99% of the time we're on the same page. And that's largely because, you know, he's selected me, I think, to lead the department, is counting on me to make good recommendations. I would say 99% of the time he does not ask for my opinion on something that's not related to economic development. So there really haven't been a lot of, you know, situations where we've actually talked at any length about a topic that wasn't sort of in my box, if you will.
Well, put yourself in Mr. Morey's position. I'm sure he has opinions about various things, and sometimes they're probably at odds with the governor. Just as if Morey were governor and Jindal were economic development secretary, he would have some thoughts that were at odds with you. But in your position, you can't really attack the governor. You've got to be a loyal soldier, right?
Well, I think I would be very candid. You know, I was... you know, what is it now? 7 years ago, I was at the Baton Rouge Area Chamber leading that team. We just had a, you know, hugely successful $16 million capital campaign, had a wonderful relationship with the board. I had every intention of staying. And so when the governor asked me to be Secretary of Economic Development, I actually drafted up over the weekend before I said yes. It's probably four pages of bullet points that I wanted to go through and really make sure that we were, you know, philosophically aligned on how we would pursue it and so forth. I was very pleased that we were, and he's been absolutely consistent on everything that was important to me relative to running the Department of Economic Development. Now, that said, we haven't really talked about he doesn't ask for my opinion on things that relate to other departments or political matters in general in Louisiana.
You don't rule out running for office at some point?
I wouldn't rule it out. It's not something that drives me by any means. My ultimate dream would be if I could find a way to have a career that would allow me to help contribute to the cultivation of the Louisiana miracle and support my family at the same time. If I could do that, I would spend the rest of my career doing it. I don't think that necessarily would mean I would ever be an elected official. There's many different ways to contribute to that.
Well, and you have a passion for higher education.
I do, and I think that I think higher education is really the next frontier. The ultimate frontier, I think, for economic development in Louisiana. I think too often in the last few years, we've kind of thought of our challenges in higher education in Louisiana as being unique to our state, when in fact, they're very much in common with most states around the country. Higher education is going through a lot of change nationally. I think it will continue to do that. But I think we've got to continue to focus on how do we develop a world-class system, because it is currently and will increasingly be critical to our economic future.
Mm-hmm. The man from Mississippi, do you follow the goings-on in your birth state?
I don't much. I'm very fond of my original home state, but I adopted Louisiana as my home state probably about 20 years ago when I was a senior at LSU. Really fell in love with Louisiana, got excited about being part of sort of the turnaround of Louisiana, if you will. I had watched Mississippi a little bit with interest more recently with the Thad Cochran McDaniel race for Senate, but that's really more the exception than the rule.
Were you happy with the outcome?
Probably best for me not to comment in my current position.
All right. 297-5633 is your number. We'll return with Stephen Morey for a few more minutes, and we're slated also to hear from Vance McAllister. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633, your number. A few more minutes with the Secretary of Economic Development, Stephen Morey, man who's held this position for the entirety of the Jindal administration. A couple of questions from listeners. Ben Balser writes, when will the film tax credits pay for themselves?
Well, if there's two different ways to think about the film production tax credit. It has been very effective at helping create a thriving film industry, creating and sustaining tens of thousands of jobs and from an economic impact perspective, provides an impact of probably 5 or 6 to 1 for every dollar of tax credits. If the question is, when will it be provide a positive return on investment from a fiscal perspective, the answer is never, because for every dollar of tax credits, the industry, including the direct and indirect effects, generates about 15 to 20 cents of state tax revenue. So it is both very effective at generating lots of jobs and economic impact, but it's also very, very expensive.
All right. Another question from Tony. If the governor is elected president, would you go to Washington with him?
You know, that's something I honestly have almost never thought
about. Secretary of Commerce, maybe?
You know, I really, I'm very personally, my great passion is Louisiana. That's not to say I don't have an interest, perhaps at some point in my life, of doing something to support the nation's development, but I would see that way down the line. I have four beautiful children that are all under the age of 10, and right now we're very focused on having the best environment for them. And for me personally, I just feel like there's so much left to do you know, in Louisiana, that this is really where I intend to focus my career, at least for the next decade or so.
The Moray family has grown since we were last together.
We have, you know, certainly, I think since we last visited, we had a daughter, Mary Catherine, who's now, I guess, almost 7 months old, perfectly healthy, has become the great joy in our family. We had three boys, 9, 7, and 5. They were absolutely opposed to having a baby sister, could not have been more upset when they learned about it. And as soon as she was born, and since that point, they've been absolutely enamored with her. And it's really been just a great blessing for our family.
Jackson? No, it was the first, right?
Jackson is 9. Samuel is 7. Benjamin is 5.
And these are all named after historical characters, correct?
Yeah, more or less. Jackson's somewhat named after a great Southern name. Also, you know, I grew up in the Jackson area in Mississippi. Samuel was kind of a family name for us. Benjamin, partly after Benjamin Franklin. And, of course, they have middle names. Benjamin, actually, one of his middle names is after Bill Jenkins, you know, the former chancellor and former president of
Benjamin Elsher. William?
Benjamin William David, yeah.
Okay. And Mary Catherine.
And Mary Catherine.
All right. Yeah. So that's 4. Will they go to school in Louisiana?
That's certainly our hope. We wish they could have gone to public school the whole way, and really would have, but our first two children had a couple of learning disabilities, and EBR, unfortunately, was just not well positioned to provide the support that they needed. But hopefully we can revisit that at some point.
All right. 297-5633. Stephen Moray has graciously consented to be with us for as long as we need him, and we've not heard from the congressman, so it may be a little longer than we thought, but that's okay. That's all right. But you're a guy who did not grow up with a silver spoon, did you?
No. My parents divorced when I was 5, and I grew up with my mom. She certainly was a, you know,
only child?
No, I had a younger brother, 5 years younger. Grew up with my mom. My mom did not remarry. She had certainly steady employment, but we were, you know, we never went without a meal, but neither did we have a lot of extra, you know, money laying around. I had a very special realization a few years ago when my first son turned 5, and we were at a soccer game, or I had taken him to one of his soccer games, and realized that, you know, from that moment forward, every day that he got with me as his dad was something I didn't have growing up. And it's something I've really cherished for my children, for my boys in particular, having the chance to grow up, you know, with both of their parents. And of course, Heather's been a wonderful mom to our children, and really has made, to the extent that I've had success and our team has had success at LED, it's to a large extent because of the sacrifices that my wife has made to enable me to work the crazy hours and to have the crazy travel schedule that I've had over the last 6.5 years.
Well, it's been quite a ride the last 10 years, really. And question, and this one may be maybe easy, maybe not. What do you think of your successor's job at BRAC, Adam Knapp? Are you close to him?
Yeah, we've worked closely together. I think BRAC has done well. You know, one of my greatest fears 6.5 years ago, really the greatest hesitancy I had in taking over as Secretary of LED was a concern that, you know, after all this investment the business community had made at BRAC, that somehow that might slow down in some way. But that really did not happen. That's both credit to the staff at BRAC as well as to the board and the business community that's continued to invest in the organization. And I really felt at that time, and I now feel with great conviction, it was the right decision to make, not just for the benefit of the state, but that, you know, I'd be able to do more for the Baton Rouge area and for the whole state of Louisiana, obviously as Secretary of the Department, than I could as the head of BRAC. And we've had a very good working relationship since then.
Well, we look forward to future visits with you. You're always very gracious, coming in once a year. Maybe we need to make that more often. What's the family doing for the 4th?
We are planning to go up to Lake Roseman. Tim Barfield and his family are out of the country on a vacation. They offered to let us stay at their place, so we're going to be up there on the lake, and I'm going to do my best to try not to work for 2 or 3 days, okay, which is a very rare occasion over the last 6 or 7 years.
I'm sure you'll have your phone with you.
I will.
It has rung a few times since we've been in studio, so we'll let you get back to work, and congratulations on the success story you've had with economic development.
Thank you, Jim. Great to be with you.
Good to talk with you. We're joined now by Congressman Vance McAllister, who's a successful business person and was elected, as we know, in a special election for the 5th District seat, won with 60% of the votes, got out of the race, and now he is back in officially. On this show a few weeks ago, he said there was a 55% chance he would run. Well, that 55% chance became about a 99% chance yesterday. Good morning, Congressman McAllister.
Good morning, Jim. Yeah. You started this whole thing, man.
Well, what caused you to pull the throttle? Why are you doing this?
Well, you know, we kept traveling throughout the district from Bogalusa to Marksville all the way up to Ruston over to Lake Providence, and I kept hearing the same thing over and over: to please reconsider, please just allow it to be their choice. Well, at first it had to be a right thing to do with my family and myself, and Kelly kept hearing it, and then we spent this weekend at the house coaching baseball and just enjoying being together to make a real decision. Is this what we're willing to subject ourselves to? And Kelly was probably one of the most outspoken constituents about to just let the people decide, and it'll be what it'll be. And we know a lot of work that we've done that we don't want to just throw it away and allow the people the choice and opportunity, because the one different thing between me and the rest of the candidates are, I have the opportunity to move up 100 spots in seniority in the House, and then with having Steve Scalise as a majority whip, there's some things that we can do for the district to make sure and help. So there are several factors that all went into it, but ultimately my family was behind me. My wife was extremely supportive of it, and we're going to let the people decide.
Mark Ballard's story in The Advocate today reads, the crowd included bikers and veterans wearing American Legion hats, and you made your announcement at the American Legion Hall in Monroe, but no local state legislators. Any surprise or disappointment that you were kind of out there solo as a public official?
No, not at all. I didn't even pay attention to that. I did notice what a diverse crowd it was, and that makes me so proud that the work I have been doing and saying all along that everyone deserves a voice is that it's ringing true and everybody feels like they have that voice and that I'm approachable by any walks of life to move their agenda forward or to at least represent them. I didn't even notice there were no public officials there, but I didn't invite anyone. I was humbled by just the amount of the people that showed up willing to support. So they knew the press conference was coming. I don't know why they chose or not chose, but I don't, I'm not the big fan of endorsements or think that it says that much. I believe the voters are a little bit smarter than that, and they make their decision based on what they feel like the representation should be.
Well, the day after you were on this program and said you would likely run, the next day, Neil Reiser said he would not run. You whipped him the first time, and obviously he decided he didn't want a rematch.
Well, I don't think it's about that. I think, you know, Neil has devoted quite a few years to public service, and he's obviously got what he wants to do and where he wants to help out. And I support Neil 100% in whatever efforts he's trying to do. And, you know, I kept hearing the stories of people saying, please get in before everybody in the district is running for the office. And for me, that doesn't matter. The more the merrier. It should be a choice for the people. I understand some of these other candidates and where their thought process and views are coming from because they're so naive. And I was just naive last November, but I've sat in the seat now for half a year. And I know what it takes, and I'm willing to give what it takes. And it's really not about individuals and personalities. It's about making sure the district gets everything it deserves.
Logan asks, what do you say to people to assure them that they can trust you as a leader?
Well, I mean, just look at my record and look at what I do. You know, I took full accountability for my mistakes and my missteps, but that was something that was on a personal level between me and my family, and I've addressed that story as much as I want to address it in the public. And for my amazing wife to give me the second chance, I just hope the voters will do the same.
David in Lafayette, you're on the air with Congressman McAllister. Hi, David. Oh, we lost David. Yesterday, a decision from the U.S. Supreme Court about health care and contraception included in the health care. The Supreme Court ruled the government cannot force certain employees to pay for birth control. That would include small companies, non-public companies, some big companies as well. But the first quote in the story on the front page of the New York Times today, above the fold, is from none other than Governor Bobby Jindal of Louisiana. He says, the court has made it clear that the Obama administration's assault on religious freedom went too far. What's your take on this decision?
You know, I have to agree with the governor on this one. That is one thing that this country was built up on, is the ability to practice your faith and not allow other faith to be forced upon you. That's the freedom that we live here in America. And I don't believe that any corporation should be mandated to have to pay for anything that the owners, the closely held companies by the owners, believe that it violates their faith and their religious practices. You know, we as a consumer have the right to purchase their product or not purchase their product, but us as a government should never get into mandating that that you're gonna fund or pay for something that goes against your belief in your
faith. All right. Well, you're an employer, as am I. Do you mm-hmm. plan on cutting off contraception coverage in health plans for those people who work for you?
You know, I wouldn't necessarily say the contraception coverage. Plan on cutting that off, but you know, I'm not. I think the real heart of the issue here is the funding of abortion. And anything, if I had the opportunity to not put money towards funding for abortion, then absolutely I will stop doing it, because that's just a belief that I have, is that we have to protect life at every cost. But when it comes to just contraceptive normal birth control and all, you know, I'm a little bit different on that, that if it helps my employer and it's their choice and what they, I mean my employee, it's their choice and what they want, then I probably won't step in the way of that.
What do you think are the biggest issues in the next Congress?
Health care. I mean, look, this Affordable Health Care Act has got to be fixed. We can, you know, I said it last year, we can holler repeal all we want. That's not a realistic opportunity. It's not going to happen, but we've got to fix it. We've got small business owners left and right that are steadily going. Can't increase, and I've got some to them that's not even worth being in business anymore because of the hours that they have to control, how many hours they can work their employees. They can't expand. I think that's the number one issue, along with veterans. And I think we can tie this veterans debacle into the health care together and start getting some of these rural health care clinics the ability to treat our veterans that are you know, just in our district alone, we have over 50,000 that live 60 miles or farther away from the VA facility.
We won't be able to get to many callers, but let's try Mike in Sherwood. Please be brief. You're on with Congressman McAllister. Hi, Mike.
Yes, I think Mr. Engster misspoke. The decision by the Supreme Court was about employers being forced to pay for insurance requirements, not employees.
Right. Well,
it
affects employees.
The prohibition was that employers cannot be forced to pay for plans that they religiously claim as a corporation. So anyway,
but the plans affect employees. But anyway. Here's a question, a devilish one from Mark, saying if the congressman believes his seniority advantage is a basis for re-election, do you support Mary Landrieu?
You know, I mean, to say I support her, I got my own race to run, and I'm gonna do what I do. But I think that is something very legitimate that has to be taken into consideration is Mary's seniority, which is why she's the head of Energy and Commerce. But I also, I've worked side by side with Bill Cassidy, and I think Bill is a fine person, and he will also do a great job.
So who are you backing?
I'm not backing neither.
Oh, interesting. Thank you, Congressman. Let's talk soon.
Thank you.
Take care. We'll be back soon, as in tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.